The Meditation Exercise Discussion, Part 2. The meditation exercise, properly used, will in time prevent the past from ever again becoming your future. This is how you're going to get well. Whereas you've been accustomed to responding to words as though they were the idea or thing referred to, you will soon respond to the wordless meaning that the spoken word awakens in your heart. You will begin to see how deeply you have been influenced by words and why language was empowered to misdirect your life's decisions and beliefs. Cruel words and unfounded judgments upon you penetrated deeply. Disagreements escalated emotionally into hurling word missiles at one another. Common sense, once overwhelmed, led an existence swayed by the tyrannical and seductive power of language. Most of us sense that it is doubt that makes us feel imperfect, so we set about adjusting the tarnished image of ourselves through seeking an exalted state in at least one person's eyes. Unfortunately, such relationships are destined to descend into undeclared wars, from which the loser awakens too late. Blind faith leads to betrayal in everything, to frustration, rage, and despair. Every effort towards perfection is itself imperfect, and frustration drives us to make the same classic mistake over and over again, expecting a different outcome. Divorce does little more than reverse the roles of who becomes the dictator and hurts the next generation. Certainly, there's a right way to happiness and perfection, but this takes a special knowledge, a lifetime of doing the right things in the right way, of dealing perfectly with imperfect people. As you will soon discover, such peace of mind comes incrementally, only through rising above resentment and doubt in the moment. During times of emotional duress, we become separate from the natural influence of our common sense. We feel this as the friction of conscience. We intuitively sense that in order to be fulfilled and complete, we need a God. Here we all make the same deadly mistake by setting up mere flesh and blood on a pedestal to accept us just the way we are in our imperfect condition, and so we get worse. This kind of bonding is really a bondage. The mortal God and God-maker is affectionately known as the relationship. An emotional euphoria attends all such love, destined to become hate relationships. So mutually worshipful and blinding are they, it is virtually impossible to realize at what point you descended into the inferior role. The false belief that you are experiencing uplifting love is due to the ego puffing up into the delirium of worth. As surely as love will betray and frustrate, a similar ego delirium will rise through resentment and angry judgments, blame. Both emotions sustain the misguided notion of always thinking you are right and never wrong, which is to say, very imperfectly perfect in the role of king and judge. Until you drop rage and resentment, it will be impossible to see, let alone resolve, the reason for your meaningless sense of existence. Through what you call love, you are emotionally and therefore unconsciously embracing and nurturing the very nature of your hate. Resentment, sustained guilt, leads to emptiness and a need for fulfillment through a servitude you think of as love. At the pinnacle of each emotional extreme, the high is precisely where the next low occurs. That is why it's difficult to detect what your problem is. At each point along the way of life, emotions reinforce all the trauma behaviors of your childhood. We inherit a mystery, a legacy of the fall into bondage, where the faulty parent roles are generationally projected, duplicated into our children, and compelling them to surrender, as we did in marriage, to another's tyrannical will. The man or woman in your dreams become a nightmare of schemes, demanding total sacrifice of your will. Good is never good enough. Nothing ever goes right, and good-natured correction is stubbornly resisted. We duplicate our home lives, marry and nurture all the baggage in one another, and marriage and relationships become living hells. Despair and hopelessness abound. Your cries are heard, and the compassionate rescuer homes in for the final kill. What is needed above all else is to cry inwardly, that you might live in perfect harmony with your conscience, from which union will spring fulfillment that you dream from others. If for this cause you embrace family more than what is right through pleasing husbands, wives, and children, then surely they'll be held to pay, and you'll never be worthy. No one has ever been worthy of grace through achievement alone, and by giving glory or attaining love in the eyes of the world. The perfect self you are unconsciously striving to emulate has been shadowing you all of your life as that vague, nagging doubt called conscience. So be still. Allow a wholesome transference of loyalty to that conscience to take place from within. Like the prodigal son or daughter, come back home. Leave behind now all false assurances from those fair-weather friends, liars, and foolish dreams. Because you cannot see beyond the disturbed surface of your thinking, begin this journey by enduring patiently life's little irritations. The reason for this is that resentment towards any external injustice not only penetrates and gets inside you, but is also made worse through the angry struggle with yourself and the faults that arise because of it. Willful struggle is like throwing fat on the fire to put it out. Every emotionally sustained sense of betterment increases internal conflict. Elevated egos of love-hate intensify the growing pressure from what your conscience is trying to say to you, mainly, that you're going the wrong way. Never doubt this healthy doubt, because it is the truth that will set you free. Sit still and face the discomfort, minus the resentment towards knowing it. Stubborn denial, resentful rejection of that still small voice, is the sole reason behind substance abuse. The grace-robbing compassion of bureaucratic social workers is also a kind of abuse. They are preventing you from finding salvation by saving you, and so are the scientific claims that emotional problems are caused entirely by chemical imbalances, when it's mostly conflict with what you're becoming and what you could be. Legions of humanity, with exactly the same problems of faith and doubt as you, precede you into the world. They are mostly well-meaning intellectuals, experts, professors, clergy, and teachers, compensating for inferiority, just like you. In the name of education, religion, and mental health, many professionals complicate your life. They seek the more secure respect of the sheepskin. But when you discover you're worse off for their advice, hostility towards them complicates your sickness and renders you more dependent on your helper, who helps himself to you. Rebellion against inept authority invariably involves resentment, and that is the sustaining life force of every problem you ever had or ever will have. Resentment and loss of selfhood and faith are connected. Doubt connects you to the bully and disconnects you from your own intuition. Emotions cause the doubt, and through doubt, a need for love arises, and you become more entangled and hence more angry and emotional. Confusion in high places abounds, from which the blind often lead the blinded. At this point, you might throw the baby out with the bathwater, rebel against all religion and values, and hence your own good. Your attitude towards the institution of marriage, religion, and God and country might become negatively charged, identifying them as the cause of all your suffering. It is not so. Liars now beckon. Kids join gangs or smoke pot in self-destructive binges. The grace robbing against imposed values that might otherwise have saved you and your loved ones can also produce the opposite effect. Underlying all needless personal and political wars are those who are afraid to confront. Consequently, they see their appeasement for peace as love for tyrants, who often they see as victims. Resentment, being the inferior form of anger, casts you into the victim role, emotionally establishing as well as perpetuating the victim base of self-destructive and antisocial behaviors. Daily doses of irritation nurture all emotionally based psychosomatic maladies. Therefore, if you're going to discover who you are and get well, you must diminish the influence of the past by patiently resolving every little frustration in the present. Should you choose to hold on to past judgments, it might become more difficult to follow through with simple everyday tasks. A problem could arise from the requirements of an employer, whereby making a living slowly becomes more and more difficult, eventually impossible. The habit of rebellion against past authorities can activate and project into the present moment, even with reasonable requirements of decent bosses. The angrier you are, the more attractive evil becomes. The resentful struggle to extricate yourself from your predicament fails. Resentment puts you between a rock and a hard place, damned if you rebel, and just as damned when you conform, because when you do, you feel like you're conforming to a tyrant. Inordinate appetites grow, and through looking for love in all the wrong places, you try to fill that spiritual void. But there is not enough love or pleasure, education, religious verses and chapters in the whole universe to fill that emptiness. The rebel against love completes himself with hate's fulfillment, taking perverse delight in tearing down the wicked world around them. Emotional faith always backfires. Overreacting to betrayal with disbelief and erecting a cold, perpetual defense of mistrust makes you cynical and mistrusting, thereby isolating you from all meaningful relationships in the future. Malevolent intent, loaded into the spoken word, is the main cause of inferiority. Inferiority could compel you to resign yourself to failure, to teach your parents a lesson, for example, or just the opposite, work yourself to death ambitiously to make people eat their words and take back the effect of their words. Apologies when obtained, or success, is no more satisfying than is manipulated love, because you remain emotionally needy and much too sensitive to language. Were you not angry, you might have put your life force to better use. You see, words cannot undo what words have done, because through resentful frustration, you keep on letting people get to you. Impatience, loaded into words, penetrated deeply, and displaced your original innocence, imprinting you with a sense of low self-esteem. But it's not so much the words that have hurt you. Rather, it is your inferior reaction to them. Resentment is the inferior reaction, you remember. Resentment is the inferior response, empowering the unseen intent of other people's wills to take root inside you. So become more and more aware by not taking things so personally. The smallest upset, such as tripping over the cat, keeps open the emotional gate to your mind. Less resentment equals preventive perception and the resolution of past and future problems. Therefore, resist becoming uplifted by praise or puffed up by judgment. Simply don't be upset. Remain even and patiently endure. Nothing can be good or great unless it is at the same time calm. Let events pass. Watch your reaction to words, familiar characteristics in people, places, and things reminiscent of past injustices. As you begin to recover, don't worry if you occasionally feel stupid, forget names, birthdays, trivias, grudges, for instance, even important matters for which you have no pressing need. Mental chatter, excuses, false memories, and music running through your head will soon fall away. Really important matters will come back for review, and when they do, they will be re-energized and accepted in a brand new light. To the degree that you understand, knowledge will translate effortlessly into life, even as the Word was made flesh. Before the time of understanding, to varying degrees, we've all been brainwashed creatures of culture. We played back religious dogma like parrots, mumbled acceptable phrases to avoid rocking the boat. Rarely did we speak honestly from our hearts. Sometimes you feared to displease, because in doing so, you felt you were hurting people's feelings. But this concern was not for others so much, but your own false sense of security, as you felt the emotional rug of their approval being pulled out from under you. In order to survive, loved ones may run from your grace-robbing grasping for affection. If you're guilty of that, rejection swelled up as pride, and the hollow of your spirit filled up with hate and guilt, all the more reason to need and look for love from that person and make them run from your greater desperation. Frustration triggers the vicious cycle of looking for love in all the wrong places. Even if it were possible to bask in the light of glorious praise, you would never be happy, because your very own need sets people up to fail, to make you a puppet of their approval. In one form or another, you're always setting others up to fail, as you set yourself to fail by judging them. All those from whom we seek love also seek it from you. We are all in want. So how can people give the love they don't have to give? Little wonder that every one of us have some kind of repressed frustration, morphing into depression, mental illness, and the various psychosomatic disorders. You will not be meditating long before old cherished beliefs start surfacing for re-examination. Scripture recalled may hold deeper meaning herefore denied you. For this reason, these words are not meant to be memorized. Rather, they are intended to awaken you to the understanding of what you already know deep down inside. Function now from that understanding. The lens of consciousness is destined to see and to be moved by the light of the Creator's reality from within you. The energy of love flowing out of the true self within is harmonious with purpose, a soothing balm to your restless nature. It is incompatible with the willfulness of an emotionally sustained ego. But as the pressures of the world disturb true purpose, pride rushes to the defense of our altered loyalties and provides the illusion that we're living our own lives. But it is not so. The process of being programmed by emotions and social pressure seems natural enough, since it mimics the purpose for which we're created. Excuses keeps us seeing the wrongness of that. Your consciousness must be detached from this order so that the subconscious may be imprinted from within by the will of the Creator. This is not possible until you are ready to turn away from self-serving pursuits. When the light comes, your faults, as well as the faults of others, will be revealed. This will be that opportunity to do what you couldn't do before, not pass judgment. Up to this time, you've been blind for two reasons. Your ego refused to see your own wrong, and your emotions kept you from seeing and doing the right thing, even if you wanted to. In the past, you could not see those influences because your ego did not want to believe there was anything greater than you were. As you come to the light, resist being resentfully humiliated in those moments of private shame. Do not arrogantly shake a demanding fist at heaven. Salvation is a gift. Wait patiently for the experience of God's purging pain. Resentment has always tainted your nobler instincts and transferred your loyalties to other than yourself. Resentment linked thought, feeling, and reaction into identifiable sensitivities to people, places, and things of the past. Daily resentment, feeding those emotional traumas, draws your consciousness into a virtual sea of thought and daydreams. Rage boils over, and acting out, the innocent are hurt. As you become objective, pull back from your thoughts and fantasies and have clarity of thinking. Practicing this presence will free you from being drawn into the endless loop of worry in your mind that is really negative faith. All compulsions to err have their cause in others taking charge of your emotional machinery. No need to repress emotion any longer as you reign sovereign over your emotions as the enlightened, detached observer. Surfacing sins will try to frighten and challenge you to struggle with them. So don't. Don't fall for that through being upset with whatever surfaces. Your anger towards your faults, as they reveal themselves, only strengthens the bondage and gives them power. Hold your ground, and soon you will be free. Resent not evil. Overcome it with good. So face your faults. Come now to the cleansing pain threshold of conscience. Be patient, and allow time, the heavenly friction, to do their work. Allow the good pressure from within to build up inside you and cause you to conform and feel the warmth of that. Do you see how you live between the two choices of pressure. One of those pressures is the world. The other is the pressure from your conscience. Choose, therefore, to be still, and let the pressure of conscience prevail. Come in and transform you from within. As they say, let go, let God. Don't be frustrated with helpless feelings, for they are the appropriate wordless cry to your soul's rebirth. Shame may intensify before salvation comes. Whatever might appear to be a suggestion during my meditation exercise is not intended to be so. My words should merely bear witness to get you to grasp hold of what you already know from within but did not trust. If you learn me by rote, the words used in this meditation exercise will cause you to remain stuck with me as an actor on the stage of life. I do not wish to be your authority, only a guide to the gate within. There is a huge gulf of difference between religious excitement and the true religious experience. The religious experience is what I want you to feel. Religious emotions produce only false feelings of salvation, preventing the real one from emerging. Most people live out a mesmerized existence, secure in their programmed and perhaps pious behavior. Like alcoholics without their fix, the environment word-dependent people re-experience their uncured guilt. Not only were they never really saved by attending church, they are only made worse through being justified in living longer, pardon the expression, living wronger. You may at some point become angry towards me because you have misused the meditation. Perhaps you hoped that I would do something for you, whereas I only revealed problems you did not want to face before. Now through humility, your soul's needs will be met. If listening to this meditation exercise were intended to make you belong to some external order, you would never get better. Those who make this mistake tend to play the blame game rather than admit the misuse of this instruction. It is not unusual to be angry because you projected hostility for your father towards me. If this is the case, you only need to see that it is so. Forbear to fall prey to another's will through your resentment, or respond to their will with a will of your own. The motivations of a prideful person differ from the humble soul. The proud person uses resentment and will to win at all costs, as well as for the denial of their guilts. So don't be concerned about the outcome. Your future will be assured through small steps of unnoticed kindness and patience. Love never imposes will. Love waited for you to give yourself freely. Be still and stop running. Let conscience catch up. The less you struggle, the better things will work through you. When emotions no longer cloud your mind, judgment purifies into discernment, which is innocence. You will perceive as well as see through your eyes. This second sight carries the effect like that of the sun, in that it makes the character flower. When you were a child, you could see in two dimensions. As you grew, the pressures of life rose up and clouded the guiding perception with angry judgments. The lamp under your feet faded. The wordless friction of anxiety followed you as conscience, and you began to think of conscience as your enemy. It wasn't. You wasted your life's energy putting out the light that exposed your deformed self. We all have physical eyes to see where we're going, but the light that shines through human eyes gives us the dimension of perception, unavailable to the beasts. The second sight is a special gift. Never lose it by being angry and upset and ambitious, showing the perfect way of living and resolving problems. The light distinguishes right from wrong, illuminates yet an unseen heavenly pathway. Conscience never was your enemy, and your friends may not have been your friends. While you were turned upside down by worldly affections, you were manipulated by its dark purpose. You felt in control, but in reality, you were a puppet of pleasure and pain. The light now outlines the dark self's allegiance to a world opposed to God. This not you is an identity that thinks and lives through you, as if it were you. It felt as though it was you originating those wicked thoughts and feelings. That is why you could not change the way you thought and blamed yourself too harshly. Pride is a counterfeit spirit of relative reality. compared with someone else's greater wrong, you felt vindicated. And yet when you took blame, that same ego spirit trapped you into self-judgment. And it also helped you wallow in the dark, velvety self-pity of a bottomless pit. On a final note, bear in mind that the meditation exercise is only a roadmap, a means to an end. The process of imagery is designed to integrate a chain of reaction of responses initiated by the awakening. If and when your hand begins to arise, it may be the evidence of an energy originating from within you. But once you discover that the concentration to the middle of your forehead can affect an effortless obedience to common sense, then imagery, while still valuable, may not absolutely be necessary. The evidence of a higher presence in meditation is a change of breathing. If you are under pressure outside and responding to it, your breathing would manifest this also. There will be some pain and tears. Do not be upset by what you see. Just acknowledge your sins, and mysteriously you'll feel the release of bondage. Should you fall to any judgment in the future, all those guilts and anxieties that you once resolved will come rushing back. Forgive, be patient with the faults of others from now on, and you'll be forgiven, as I said. As you become accustomed to your new state of awareness, wisdom should dictate maintaining that relationship with your Creator by practicing this procedure, as I've said, 3 times a day, morning, noon, and night. Awareness you are acquiring is a very precious gift that can be lost by reason of any reaction to the smallest slight. This procedure is at once the prevention and the cure of all emotionally caused maladies. If you wish, you may discard this instruction along with my many books and instructions and lectures. Whatever you do, know that it's essential that you continue to reaffirm your daily devotion to what is right in your heart for the rest of your life. Be advised, this is not a toy. Once you begin this journey, as I've said before, do not back to your old ways. You may not be able to return to the good ways. The more you shine, the more you'll embarrass others by your very existence. Expect, therefore, persecution without apparent reason. Watch out for any subtle discouragement by malevolent thoughts. Observe them, forbear to resent them, and soon it will lose its power to hurt you and discourage you and cause you doubt. The spirit of cruelty exists in 2 places, inside people, outside you. Remember, it got inside you through your overreactions of resentment. Struggling angrily with its nature as it makes itself known inside you gives it the power to make you more miserable. Be aware, resentment is your Achilles heel. Remember again, patient endurance will preserve the clarity of a perception and guarantee the manifestation of a meaningful and purposeful life.